Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Josh Brown, it's Monday, but it's not Monday.
Hey, it's not Monday. It's actually Friday.
Friday for us.
Because I'm away on Monday, so we're recording this early, trying to slot it in at the end of the day.
We thought we would pre-record a wind-up because you'll be in Ireland. You'll be in Dublin.
I will. That's not an accent.
That's an accurate pronunciation of Dublin.
This is chaos pod, man. Like, I didn't want to leave without a podcast being recorded for the wind-up. Uh-huh. And now it's coming in hot with the most chaotic energy.
Yeah. Yes.
Imaginable. Hopefully Ireland would have been good.
Oh, man, as someone who's been to Dublin, it's incredible, and I can't recommend it enough. Get yourself to the Guinness Factory. I think I told you the other day.
I've got a great guide. I'm meeting up with a pal of mine called Matt, who actually is in a great band called The Academic, which everyone
Oh, that guy.
To. Yes,
shout out to that guy.
He's lovely, but he's obviously an Irish native, and I've seen him over here a few times, and he's going to come up and show me the good spots, you know what I mean? And I've had some lovely recommendations, by the way, from people who listened to The Wind-Up last week and got in touch to recommend places. Those all look excellent too. Thank you very much.
We love your little community, haven't we?
I'll not be... We really do.
Loving it.
Hopefully I'm not going to be shell-shocked when I fly back and I will be able to appreciate them to the fullest.
Yes, have a lovely, lovely time. We thought we'd break down a few different things though because I'm playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You're a bit further through Pacific Drive and we'll talk a little bit about remakes, remasters, the conversations that have come out of Final Fantasy. However, let's start on PlayStation Stars. Why is this in our remit, Josh Brown?
It's your fault. It is all Scott Tailford's fault. When PlayStation Stars launched, which if you did not know, is a reward system that PlayStation rolled out, I think, last year, that it was, initially just sort of came and went.
It was meant to be an NFT program, and then NFTs tanked in regards to public perception, so they kept the functionality and removed the pricing structure.
Right, okay.
So you unlock little like logos and icons and like bits of ephemera for video games, but they're all hidden inside the PlayStation app.
Exactly. So this is only, at least to my knowledge, available on the PlayStation app. So I never checked it because I thought it was all what you said there. It was just, you know, tat. It was avatars. It was skins or whatever it is. Things I'm not going to look at. Fake trophies to put in a fake trophy cabinet. You know, I want real trophies, like the ones attached to games. Thank you very much. But then you told me that you can actually redeem points that you earn on PlayStation Stars for real life money. You can get the PlayStation vouchers or whatever you would call it, the redeemable cash that you can spend on the store if you get so many. So I thought, well, I'll check how much I have. And I had just enough points to redeem a £20 gift voucher. So then I thought, well, £20 is £20. That's quite a lot of money, you know. It takes Final Fantasy VII down from 70 to 50, and I'll be able to buy that game now. So I thought, well, how can I get these points? Because you get them from buying games, but you can also get them from playing certain titles or buying certain titles. And then I saw you can get an extra 250 points on top of the points you already get if you buy Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I thought, well, I'm going to do that anyway. So now I'm trying to game the system to get these points as high as I can. And I like it.
The thing is, like, it's a nice, lovely little thing that I think they could do a lot more with. Like, if you want to know where it is, anyone who's listening, go on the PlayStation app. It's at the top. There'll be a number next to your name, you probably in a single digit, that represents your PlayStation Stars level. If you tap on that, you'll go into the PlayStation Stars window, and they'll show these various trophies that you earn. It's just like characters and stuff. But like you said, all the goals that are attached to it are like, play one of these five horror games, play whatever, and then you just have to boot it up, and then on the app it'll trigger and be like, here's your points, or here's your like free free thing. Most of it is just free stuff, has no value, but they tend to rotate every week, I think, for the premium ones, when you get the gold coins and stuff, which those are the ones that can actually over time be equated to real money on the PlayStation Store. And you are getting points like Nintendo Switch. Like, yeah, every time you buy something on the eShop, you get 10% of whatever the coinage is as like a point thing, and you can use that towards purchases. It's just worth saying, Microsoft have the rewards program, like there's that thing on Xbox. And if you've bought a lot of games on PlayStation, you have to set, there's a thing you have to set up so that it's tracking PlayStation stars, because we told Ewan about it and then he hadn't set up the app or something.
Right.
And I think it hadn't been tracking the whole time he'd been buying stuff. No. Whereas me and you have had the app for a long time.
Yeah.
So it might be contingent on how long you've had the PlayStation app.
Yeah, it's a strange process, because as far as I'm aware, as long as you have the app and like you signed up to stars, I don't even know if you need to do that, but then it'll track the purchases, but it won't track the campaigns that they run.
Yeah.
The campaigns are separate that you opt into, so that 250 extra points for buying Final Fantasy. If I bought Final Fantasy without opting in, I wouldn't get those extra points, so it encourages you to go on the app. It's not a perfect system by any means. It's more of a PSA to say that I didn't know I had all of these points banked, and you might too.
No,
you might be nearly, you might be nearing that £20 gift voucher threshold, and you might be able to treat yourself this weekend.
You should tell us about Pacific Drive, where you're at on it, and then we'll talk about, I'll just do all things remakes and the approach to them, etc. But Pacific Drive, still good little time.
Still really good, Scott Telford. You know, I'll keep this short because I waxed about it at length on the last wind-up, but I'm right at the end of the game now. I have two missions to go. I've discovered all of the zones now. I've done a big explore, and it's just the best. The further I got into this game, the weirder things became, and the more story I unveiled. It's just so my thing of, you know, this kind of mysterious part of the Pacific Northwest of America going a bit strange, going a bit stalkerish.
Right.
That as a framing device absolutely works for me. And fortunately, the gameplay loop has kept me engaged. It's you know, I wish I said this last week, but it's one of those games that I need to name this subgenre. And for lack of a better term, I'll describe it as, it's a game for those freaks like me who liked the briefcase management in Resident Evil 4.
Oh my God. Play Tetris, for the love of God.
Nah, man, that's not satisfying. I don't want to slot those things in and have them get points from that. I want to be able to slot things in, take them back to a base and use all those resources. I can't use a Tetris piece, can I?
I feel like you could play Tetris Effect and just love it. I'd love it.
The difference is, right, Tetris, don't get me wrong, I like a bit of Tetris
nice
now
little
and again,
time.
But there's not an extra element that there is to something like Dredge or Pacific Drive. It's because I'm trying to manage this storage, I'm trying to manage my resources, because I want to bring as many back as possible so then I can upgrade my vehicle and then get a better gaming experience. So that's the draw. It's not necessarily just doing the stacking. It's being able to hoard all of this stuff, bring it back for a big haul.
In an efficient way.
Yeah, and then put floodlights on my car or better reinforced tires. That's the beauty of it.
Okay, I'm going to have to play this thing, but it's not going to be until, I don't know, the summer.
Understandable.
Is it beating Dredge for you?
No, not quite.
Okay.
I think gameplay-wise, I'd prefer to play Pacific Drive, but Dredge story and atmosphere-wise kind of beats it to the course. I hope they make a Pacific Drive 2, because the things that are drawbacks for me are just sometimes the repetition of assets, because, you know, I like going out to explore. I would do it until my heart's content, but, you know, you're seeing the same buildings and structures over and over again, and that does get a little bit tedious after a while, but it's hard to complain because it's a studio of under 20 people and it's a huge game. I've played it for 25 hours and counting, and I'll probably hit 30 hours by the time I'm finished, so I can only kind of commend it enough. It's not quite Dredge level, but for 25 quid, man, if you're a fan of it's the kind of like car, not even car games, but the idea of, you know, building up a vehicle and upgrading that vehicle alongside the horror influences, definitely check it out. Tell me what you think
like
about it.
Like a drivable base.
Literally a drivable base.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Like a roguelike, but you're driving your HQ around.
Precisely, man.
That's cool. I want to touch on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and we'll pivot off into the general conversation on remakes, remasters, and what people want from them these days, because there's tons of them, as the Star Wars Dark Forces remaster, not a remake.
Not a remake.
Or maybe it is. Just released in the Star Wars Battlefront collection is out across March as well. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth has my favorite opening of the year.
Wow.
I love it. I love the. I missed it. I talked about this on the UBP, which for the people listening to this would have been last Friday. I love that latent MCU energy. That sort of when we were watching 2016 through 2019 MCU, when it was peak, everyone's talking about it. We're all on the same page. We're all trying to guess what's happening. Trailers being broken down. Everyone's suggesting different things, theories, etc. The start of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth directly addresses one thing that a lot of people have been talking about in the first few moments, and I absolutely love it. And so, like, I think for me, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I hope it proves me wrong going forward, is a game of, I was going to say two halves, but the story stuff is at the minute outweighed by the open world stuff. Mm. And the open world stuff, sadly, is the Ubisoft open world. So it's just so much like, go to these towers and unlock more of the map. You can run around if you want, but you won't know how many different parts of things to interact are there. Go do these combat encounters. Go find these relics that you can hold a button on for a bit. Mm. You know, go do this really arbitrary open world bloat BS that I feel like we left behind. And with like Far Cry 6 at the most, I feel like people were sick of that back when The Crew 2 came out.
Yeah.
When they put tower unlocks in The Crew. And it's just a little bit of a shame. The thing is, I love the cast of characters. I love the story elements. I love, like, you know, the music, the presentation, everything else. But what I'm actually doing is climbing up yellow handholds to get to a thing where I hold a button, or I go through a cave system and I squeeze through slowly,
yeah,
or whatever. And I personally can't look past that in 2024. It feels ancient.
That is
for the open world stuff.
Upsetting to hear, you know, especially comparing it to an Ubisoft open world.
For now,
game, which I am absolutely sick of.
Yeah,
it's funny you should mention this because I had a strange relationship, as you know, with Final Fantasy 16, but specifically the side missions and the more exploratory areas in that game, because mm-hmm. I didn't like the side missions, but I found myself doing them all, you know.
In 16. I thought there was a way better thematic reason in 16. It's part of why I love that game's overall design.
Right.
Like, we talked about it when I did that whole Final Fantasy 16's genius video, and we did that debate on the state of the game when we first both finished it.
Totally.
I thought that reinforced the main thread in a way that this stuff doesn't.
Right, okay.
So far.
No, but it makes a lot of sense. No, it makes total sense where you're coming from that perspective. I didn't necessarily have that narrative grounding for me in 16, yet I was still kind of compelled to do them. I think when it comes to the Ubisoft-style open-world approach, I don't mind it if it is reined in a bit. The thing that I don't like about, you know, Far Cry 6 or the latter-day Assassin's Creed games is that the scope is so big, the scale is so big that it all just meshes together and kind of becomes a bit pointless. Mm-hmm. But if it's pared down, I don't mind repeating stuff here and there, or even, you know, just going to a place and pressing a button on it. If it feels more consequential, yes. It's when it just becomes like a tick list of 100 things you can do. You
that's
know?
So far, that's what it's felt like. And I think it's interesting seeing people respond to like how big and how stretched the scope of this remake is, because it's so far beyond the beat-to-beat, location-to-location stuff that Final Fantasy, the original, was. Like, we're so far beyond that. There's so many additional characters and locations and things to do in those locations that I find quite tiring and unnecessary and just bloated and pointless. And like, but it's not that I don't enjoy being in that space. I love all the music. Like, there's 600 new songs here. And it's like, it might go on to be Nobuo Uematsu's final work, because he said he's stepping back from composing going forward. And I love the vibe of it. And I love the character writing. I think the direction is a huge step up. Like, Naoki Hamaguchi is a phenomenal director. And I think the direction, the character writing, all that stuff is great. But there's just something about it where it doesn't have that a purposeful drive to it. And I just feel like I noticed that, where like Ubisoft game design or certain open world game design is like, here's a ton of stuff to do. Aren't you having fun? And I'm like, well, sure. Like, legally, I'm sure I'm having fun. Like, chemically, the parts of my brain are firing, but I'm too aware of, like, why? Well, I don't even need to. Why? Like, and there was I did a thing. I'm only about 5.5 hours in. I'll be a lot more of that by the time we next talk. But 5.5 hours in, I've just fought the Midgard Zolom. It's called the Midgard Zemur or something in this one. It's the giant snake from Final Fantasy VII, and that's a story beat. But there was loads of open world stuff I could have done before then, and I was just mopping that up. I was doing some fights. I was picking up flowers. I was converting things into potions, and I was like, I could do this for a long time. There's hours of this. There's this arbitrary open world bloat that I could do, or I could go to the story marker and do the thing. And the characters are saying, like, you know, well, let's spend some time here. Oh, let's go do this thing. Are you sure you want to move forward? And Aerith made a specific comparison to Final Fantasy VII Remake. You know, in Remake, when you're in, it's the first time you're in the slums, you're next to Seventh Heaven, and there's like 5.5 dudes on the map that you can go do side missions for.
Yeah.
Did you like that feeling?
It's going to be maybe a classicos feeling. I love that feeling.
You will love Final Fantasy VII Rebirth then.
Interesting.
Because she literally says, we have a bunch of optional stuff to do. It's just like when we were back in the city.
Right.
And I, in that moment, went, oh, God. Because I have to, that's 5 optional to-do things before I get to the next meaningful beat. And that's a beat that's reinforced by a story that I know is great from the original game.
Yeah.
And I know what we're getting to. So, like, it kind of works against itself if you know the original material.
That makes a lot of sense, actually, yeah, because you know how impactful or how tight this could be.
Yes.
You've got that, you know, reference point. I think I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Final Fantasy in general. But that bit in the slums, like you mentioned, you know, I love the ability to just walk around there, talk to people, do missions for them. I wasn't too keen on the missions themselves, where it was right. Like, go kill 5 dogs,
that's a key distinction, because I do love just the new version of Calm, which is the town that the game opens in after you get past all the intro stuff. Calm is the first place the gang goes to after they leave Midgar in FF7, and it's like one screen in the original game. Like, you get like an isometric look into the town, you stop off, you get a big plot dump, which is all done in flashback, and you go to the merchant and you stock up and you leave, and 99% of people would have never gone back there.
Right.
In this one, it's a whole thing. It's a massive place to explore. You learn a new card game there, which is great, by the way. It's called Queen's Blood. You can play these card games. You can explore. There's loads of NPCs. There's a little mini story they do with a side character. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And I like that too. That's enjoyable. That's fine. And that feels purposeful, and it reinforces the themes of the world. But then some of the open, that's location specific. But then when you get out into the open world, where it says here are like 10 markers on the map, and they're question marks, and you don't know if they're worth it. And then when you get there, it's a relic to pick up, or it's a boss fight. You got to fight a creature because Chadley's back from the original one, and he wants you to get combat data. And it's like, yeah, I guess so. I think I fundamentally struggle with taking such a well-knitted, beloved, and clearly authored work and just stretching it out.
It does seem to be pushing your, what I would describe as Scott Telford buttons, because yes, you have that reference point. You know how this story, quote unquote, should be. And I also know you're a stickler for narrative propulsion anyway.
Yeah.
So I imagine you're like, but the good stuff is there. Good stuff is right there.
To round that off as well, because I this is going to be the thing that I can talk the most about all year, because it's Final Fantasy VII is like in my blood. I've been with it since the beginning, etc. It's just that thing about, like you said, narrative propulsion and like wanting the next beat and just struggling to like find that. And also, the thing that's really starting to get to me is that they're not addressing what happens at the end of Remake.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And it's like, what happens at the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake is not in the original. It's fundamentally a new thing. It's a metatextual thing. It's breaking the fourth wall. It's a whole thing. It's a huge thing, and it involves characters flying through the sky and fighting Destiny itself and loads of stuff like that. So far, that has not even been mentioned. No one has said, what was that about? What do we do? What was that? Because that was a huge thing in all of your lives all at the same time, and it probably should have meant something.
Yeah.
And so far, it hasn't. We're all just acting like the party was in the original Final Fantasy VII.
That's interesting.
It's interesting, but it means that they've had to almost course correct to get away from the Tetsuya Nomura stuff that was at the end of that game, which is when the game went full Kingdom Hearts, and that was a bit divisive. I like the journey we're on,
yeah,
but I'm going to need you to address it at some point, because what the hell are we doing?
Maybe they will. Like you said, you're only 5 hours in. They might have to bring it up at a certain point. You certainly, surely cannot ignore that, right?
Yeah, if me and you just fought a god in the sky, I'd probably talk to you about it the next day.
The thing is, though, you are right. We would have a lengthy chat about it. We do a whole wind-up podcast on about it.
I'd be wound up.
You know, I'm not saying that I know they're going to do this. They might not. To me, in my head, I'm wondering if they're doing a thing with that, doing that on purpose to eventually circle back around to it and say, like, maybe that was something that they've blocked out, or maybe because it happened in this different realm, maybe they've forgotten about it. Maybe they've been like switched back to their how they should be in the track they should be on. Don't know if they're gonna do that, but I would I'm giving it a bit of benefit of
the
doubt.
Maybe. There's a lot of authorship here. I'll also say the only thing that's rubbing me up the wrong way is just some of the I love the character writing and the direction and stuff, but there's certain ways that they shoot scenes with Aerith and Tifa where it's just very on the nose of like, you guys fell in love with these characters and think they're very hot for the last few decades, as opposed to getting them more naturally in the original. And that's not to say that we didn't get those ridiculous cutscenes of Tifa in the original. I get it. She was always this over-the-top character, and she was. But it's just the way that they shoot some of the stuff with Tifa and Aerith in the same frame, where they're both looking at you, looking through the lens at you, the player,
right,
asking you certain questions. And it's like, this is pure fanboy wish fulfillment.
Right.
And I mean that in the most immature way possible. Like, I don't feel respected as a player. Like, it's just like, oh, I bet you wish you could get with both of them, don't you? Oh. And I'm just like, what is this?
Like a step below, like Quiet from Metal Gear Solid 5 shaking her ass at you
helicopter. It's Quiet in Metal Gear Solid 5. It's Michael Bay's way he used to shoot women in the Transformers movies.
Like, oh, right.
That far, but it's on that trajectory. Same where you're aware of, like, you're into them, aren't you? Oh. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, it's just a weird beat. And it was never in the original. It wasn't even in the 10th anniversary stuff. But it was in Remake. There's that bit when Cloud has one woman on each arm.
Right.
And they keep making jokes in this about, like, oh, he's going to have his pick of both of them. And, like, characters talk to him about, like, oh, you know, there's a shack in the swamp if you want to go down there with one of them. And, like, it's just a bit gross.
I know what you mean. I'm looking forward to experiencing it. I must admit, there was definitely, you know, of course, a bit of that in Remake itself.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, outside of that, I did quite like how horny Remake was. Like, how
this one's got the same thing.
It was, like, it didn't feel like it was just, well, it did at some points, like the developers just themselves presenting the characters this way. Like, the characters themselves were horny, and it was like, that's an interesting choice. Maybe was
I think you've got to commit to it. I think some of that is going to be an East meets West like mentality thing, where it's like, if you're going to go there, then you might as well go all the way with that stuff and do it more convincingly, I guess, rather than just the sort of like playing around. We're going to invoke those thoughts and we're not going to do anything with them stuff.
Yeah, no, it's a good criticism. I'm excited to play this game, Scott Tilford. Mm. The moment I land back in England next week, I will be picking this game up. Not for those reasons. I'm going to be playing it respectfully, as you know.
Look, I'm clarifying. I'm a Tifa man. I love Tifa so much, but I love her as a woman. Damn it! I don't need you to be pandering to the whole. Have you seen the size of her chest? Yes, that's it. It's because everything else. Have you played the game? Have you seen what she does in the game?
I need to see it, Scott. That's what I need to see. I need to know what happens in Final Fantasy VII because I don't know anything now. I know the big thing, of course, with one specific character and their fate to keep it as vague as possible for a game this old. I know it's now new. Mm. But nothing else. I don't even know the location. I don't know where we go from here. I don't know what the end game is.
Right.
And you could maybe argue that the writers don't either, but... But it's exciting to be on this ride. It genuinely is. I'm being facetious here, but I am.
I've gone from excited to intrigued. I'm excited by the story stuff. The way they open this game, phenomenal. So much confidence, love it. And then that is then offset by open world bloat and go do these things for 10 hours and then we'll give you another bit of story stuff. And I think those are two almost diametrically opposed things. And part of me would just take the story stuff. Even though I love hanging out with these characters and I'm trying to just force that mentality of, well, don't I want to just hang out with everybody and just have all this time in the open world? Sure. But yeah. I think I want a bit more propulsion. I want a bit more of addressing what happened in the end of Remake, and I want a bit more narrative propulsion overall as to what we're even doing.
Nope,
we're looking for Sephiroth. He's somewhere. And like that's kind of all we're doing. Which is what they were doing in the original, but they didn't have all the remake stuff back then.
Okay. I think it's fascinating that, you know, too many people, yourself included, Final Fantasy VII was almost like an overnight seismic shift in gaming. Mm. It landed and things were different after that.
Yeah, man.
Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is, you know, my entrance point into the entire franchise, is going to end up being a decade plus experience. Like, this isn't something that is just landing overnight. It's a constant journey, like you described it, that I'm now on. Yeah. I will play the second game, and then I'll probably wait another 4 or 5 years before the third game comes out. Maybe there'll be some DLC for Rebirth in between.
It's this lengthier
process. Maybe once the full everything's done, you know, I'll see.
You told me 4 years ago you'd play the original one.
Yeah, I know, and I meant it at the time, but then I thought, I can just wait, play the remake all the way through. You know, I was thinking this. I wouldn't read a book while I was halfway through a television show. That's about...
It depends if they're fundamentally linked, though. This one is fundamentally built on the original.
Yeah.
These are sequels to the original.
It is, but will it not make it even more beautiful when I go back to the original and fill in the blanks?
I don't know. Mm. I don't think so.
Interesting.
I think you're going to go back. I don't know about if you get through this much Final Fantasy VII, I don't think the impetus is going to be there to go back to the original. Whereas if you had the original in your chamber right now, that only enhances the journey we're on.
I think you're probably right. I think you're certainly right, in fact. But... I think it's going to be an after-the-fact thing for me. I think it's going to have to be. If I had the nostalgia, if I grew up with it, absolutely. But now that I'm already about to be over halfway through the remake experience, it feels a bit strange to just go back and then finish the remake experience off with the knowledge when I haven't had it for the previous two games.
I think they want you to have that knowledge, but time will tell. Everything so far is that they are playing on those beats. The fact that Zach is in here is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You'd only be benefited knowing his story.
Well, I would, of course I would, but I feel like why I love this experience, and I am calling it an experience because it is years-long thing, is because I think it caters to newcomers and oldcomers, for lack of a better term. Of course, it's playing off the knowledge base and the history that fans have with this story, with these characters, with how the game is supposed to be. Mm. But at the same time, man, I still felt that playing Remake. I didn't feel it as much as you, of course, in terms of, you know, when specific scores are coming in. I didn't have those reference points, but I still felt that way about Zack, and I'm still going to feel that way about characters in this game. Mm-hmm. Obviously not to the same extent, but I'm still getting a lot from it is what I'm trying to say, and I think it would only make me appreciate Final Fantasy VII, the original, more if I have this experience and go back to it, and then I can think, oh, so that's what they were doing all the way through.
Maybe.
I think it's got a broad appeal.
No, it does. And like we said this in the UBP that I think like the way they're pulling this off is unbelievable. Like the fact that they are like tap dancing over so many different like ways of approaching this story. It is a Herculean feat and it is impressive. But yeah, where I'm at the minute, it's just a mix. But I'm only ever going to give people my in progress thoughts. And if I'm doing a video and it's called a review, that's a final statement.
Right.
If it's anything else, it's what I'm thinking in the moment. I never get why people get so confused about that. Not that anyone's ever come at me about it, but in general, there's a conversation about that. And it's like, no, I'll just give you where I'm at.
I think it's fascinating. Time. Again, I've used that word a lot, but you know, we joked before we started recording because I'd only had your opinions of the first 2 hours and I'd seen your tweets where you were like, sensational.
Opening's great.
I love that I'm on this ride, you know, amazing. And I don't know, there's something when you write something down, I feel like it wrongly so, feels more definitive than it should because, like you say, it is an in-progress thought. And just because you wrote that then doesn't mean you can play the next 3.5 hours and go, actually, my opinion has changed a bit.
We all watched Game of Thrones play out.
Like,
my whole thing is like, the thing that I tweeted out at like 2 a.m. on the first night, totally true. Love the intro. Absolutely love it. It's the open world stuff that starts to throw it off. And it's because I love the opening and the story focus and the character focus so much that when you remove that, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
What are we doing? But I guess we'll see. We haven't got that much time left in this studio, Josh Brown, but we'll do one quick thing. That is a carryover question from the UBP that I thought would fit better here. From Paul McSoul, who said, when it comes to remakes and remasters, do we believe that one is better than the other, or is it situational? And if so, what determines which to do?
I love this, because now that we don't have time to do the original chat we were going to do, we can use this as a runway to tease next week's episode.
Yes.
Which will hopefully be about the remakes thing that we've been planning for like 3 weeks and haven't got to. Great question, that, Paul. Great question. I think I prefer remix, and it's because of the Final Fantasy VII approach. It's because of the Resident Evil 4 approach that we were just talking about there. I mean, remasters, of course, are welcome, but remasters often replace the original. You know, you have something like even The Last of Us PS4 remastered edition came out and it kind of replaced the original PS3 version. No one was going back then after the fact to experience the original in how it was. So that can be a blessing and a curse depending on how good the remaster is. You know, you look at something like Silent Hill, not having the fog, not getting certain things right. You look at even the Arkham, I can't remember what it's called, Return to Arkham, where they remastered the first two games. Mm-hmm. The color palette was like a little bit off. It just felt a little bit different from the original, and that was almost trying to replace the original in terms of access. So remasters can be good, but to me it's remakes through and through because they have the ability to play off what you have already experienced. They can talk to each other, they can complement each other a little bit more, and you can mix things up in a way that honors the original by doing something new.
Mine is definitely more of the I like the access point. I like the original. I like the original work. I like the mentalities that went into the original, the people that brought it together, the state of the industry was in. What did it mean for that particular industry? Is it worth bringing something back? Like, can it be done again? Is there a reason for something to exist again? If there is, and there's a new audience, or there's a point that you want to make. Weirdly, my brain served this up right now. It reminds me of Rage Against the Machine when they did like 3 albums and a cover album. Yeah. And they were always asked, Tom Morello, the guitarist, Zach De La Rocha, the singer, why haven't you come back and done more? All the things you guys were singing about are so relevant now. Why don't you do something else? And Zach De La Rocha was always like, well, we would just be repeating ourselves. It's the exact same, like everything we've said it and it's done and it's there. And so I'm way more down the line of, do we need this in terms of the remake? What are you actually bringing to the table? And is the game actually available? I really like what Night Dive Studios have done with like Dark Forces, where they literally say, we want to make a game play like how your brain remembers it.
Right.
Because your brain will upscale it over time anyway. So like they just try and hit that. So it's like the essence of the original. Like the Tomb Raider remasters are great. And it's like they have a modern control scheme if you want it, but 99% of it is the original with a bit of better graphics, but it plays like the original. For me, it's just making gaming history accessible. To me, that's the main thing.
Absolutely. No, I fully agree with that, especially when it comes to remasters in particular. Mm. And I think even remakes, you know, I want to see a future where you can play the original version of whatever it is you're playing now, whether it's emulated, whether it's a port, you have access to it in the new thing. I just think that would be fantastic. I don't know why more games don't have the Tomb Raider or Master Chief Collection feature of being able to instantly change the presentation back to how it was back then how it played.
It's just a game engine thing.
And be able to do those direct comparisons. Like, I'd love to be able to, like, I mean, you know, Wolfenstein, The New Blood and Wolfenstein The New Order both featured old Wolfenstein games within them. Like they were a bit obtuse to access, but they were there.
Metal Gear 4 had that Metal Gear Solid 1 level.
Yes, yeah. Doom had the original Doom games in. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's a good way to keep these games, you know, available. Mm-hmm. Keep honoring them whilst, you know, presenting an altered version of it, whether that is a remaster that slightly changes things around or a remake that completely overhauls everything. Mm-hmm. Like, just keep those original games accessible because they're a part of history. They're art people worked on, and the fact that, like, to see those go away is always a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's like it's worth having this conversation now. It'll be the conversation that continues for the rest of at least the Final Fantasy VII remake project, whatever the hell they're going to end up calling it. But it is worth touching on with all the differences that are in Rebirth. We must exit this studio as we get booted from the side. I've Scott Telford. You've Josh Brown.
I've Josh Brown. Sometimes pleasure.
Sometimes pleasure, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you very soon.
Bye,
have a lovely
bye.
Week. Talked over him.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.